Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come up with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. This is Ben Baker. Thank you for being an amazing audience. Wherever you guys listen, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, iHeart, SoundCloud, wherever you listen, you know, subscribe. Those shows come on every single week. Every Wednesday at 10 o'clock, a new show comes on. Love having you as my audience. Love hearing from you. So email me at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com. Tell me what you like about the show. Tell me things about the guests. Tell me some guests that you'd love to hear on the show. I always want to find out about my audience, but that's what it's all about. It's all about the conversation, and that's what I really love. Speaking of conversations, I have the real Wizard of Oz on the show today. I have the founder, the brain, this inspiration behind Blue Fishing, the art of making things happen, Steve Sims. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I heard you, Dennis Brown's podcast, and I'm sitting there and I'm out for a walk, as I usually am. You know, I've got six or seven podcasters that I listen to on a regular basis. And Dennis is a good buddy of mine. And, you know, I love what he does. I'm listening to you. And all of a sudden I stopped and I found a bench and I sat down and I listened. I said, I got to get Steve on the show because you and I have a lot in common. I want to be where you are today. We both come from the construction background.
Both stunningly good looking.
That's right. We both have good faces for radio. You know, you got more hair on your chin. I got more hair on my head. But you know what? We're both losing it very quickly. But I want to find out, because tell me about where you came from, because you came from construction, working with your hands in a concierge to the stars, to being somebody that can sit there and make things happen for people and be able to create the make the impossible possible. So I want to find out, how did that journey begin? What was the philosophy behind it? And what drove you to along that path? Because it's a crazy path, and the story deserves to be told.
So there's a lot in there. So let me try and kind of nut it down. Someone actually said to me, I think it was Joe Polish, said to me that I had the enormous talent of ignorance. And you kind of think about it and you go, I'm not quite sure if that was a nice thing he just said. But as entrepreneurs, our superpower 9 times out of 10 is ignorance. We look at things, we go, we can do that. And then we go and do it while all the others are there. Well, this could go wrong and that could happen. Meanwhile, we've done it. Or we failed and learned how not to do it. And then we've got another direction and achieved it. So my story is exactly the same as everybody else's out there. Every entrepreneur that's spending time to listen to this, we share the same story. We woke up one day and went, hang on, this doesn't work. This doesn't fit. Now, I grew up in East London. My family owned a very tiny little construction firm. I left school at the age of 15. Schooling system is different in England. You go through to your 16, then you go to college. In America, you go to high school. So it's slightly different. But I left, and I was a young age in my year. So I left school at 15, and my family were like, no point in you going to college. Get on the building site, boy. And that was it. And I remember going to the building site and just thinking, yeah, is this it? Is this what's going to go on? And I would walk around in a kind of a daze thinking, what's next? Really is. And of course, you don't know anything. Now we're flooded with information. We are saturated with your Insta-perfect worlds and cars. I got a 14-year-old that can name brands, can name watches, can name cars. We never had any of that. We never had any of that to actually kind of like educate us with, for want of a better word. So I grew up just wondering, is there something outside of London? Is the world flat? And then it happened. And you may have read it in the book, but not a plug for the book.
No, we'll definitely plug the book. I mean, we have to plug the book.
It's the greatest work since Harry Potter and the Pope and the Bible, but there you go. But something happened to me. Everyone's life has this moment, has this conduit, this catalyst, this explosion that happens. And it happened for me on a building site. I was walking up a ladder and I had a hod of bricks, a big pile of bricks on my shoulder to hand out to the bricklayers at the top. I got to the top of the scaffolding and the first person next to me was my dad. Next to him was my uncle, my cousins, and then my granddad. And I was looking down there, just about to drop the bricks, and I thought, this is my family tree. This is it. There's no point of effort because this is it. And it was so perfect, so pinnacle, that my granddad was at the end of this line, that my dad yelled at me, and he's like, hey, put the bricks down, get some more, we're working here. So I went down and continued, and this was going through, this picture, so vivid, I can even tell you the smells on that day. Now, come 10 o'clock, they have a break. We all jump into a little cabin, a warm-up before we go back out again. And I went over to my granddad and asked him probably one of the dumbest questions I've ever said in my life. I said, Granddad, did you want to be doing this when you were your age? You know, and he's like in his early 80s now. He didn't punch me, thankfully, but he just uttered these words without even looking at me. And he said, son, if you don't leave today, if you don't quit today, I can be accurate with it. If you don't quit today, you'll be me tomorrow. And I was like, fudge. So I got up, I looked at my dad, the bell went, the door opened, we all went out of the building site, and I went, Dad, I've got to have a word with you. And he said, what's that? I said, I quit. And he's like, what? I said, I quit. I said, I have to quit. I said, yeah, I just spoke to granddad. I said this to him, and he said, if you don't quit today, you'll be me tomorrow. I can't be him tomorrow. He said, he looked at me, granddad, and he said, we're light-handed, finish the week. And I went, okay, I'll finish the week. We never really spoke about that day, but I like to think he knew and was happy for me to kind of come to that. Boy, getting home to my mum, my Irish mum, who was just going, that did not go well. Talk about friction. In fact, sadly, I don't think our relationship was ever good again, because when you're young, you say stupid things. You don't think too much. She said, you think you're better than us. And I went, I am better than this. I remember specifically saying, I am better than this, not you, than this. Of course, she was a bit of a hothead, and that's where I get it from. But our relationship was never very good after that. My dad understood. But it was that moment that I realized I needed to be something else. And of course, then you do, again, what all entrepreneurs do, you try to find how the square peg can fit in the round hole. And I tried everything from selling insurance, door-to-door sales, book sales, marketing, branding, telephone call centers. I tried so many different things and found all of them didn't work. That from the outside, I just looked like a impulsive kid that couldn't hold on to a job. People would talk to me in a week and I would have had three jobs in that week. And they were like, my mum just thought, well, we're just waiting for the time that, you know, you just end up in jail. She just naturally assumed from East London or back bricklaying. That was it. She just couldn't fathom it. And here's where, again, the second conduit happened, the second explosion in my life. I talked my way into getting a job as a trainee stockbroker. Now, yeah, a friend of mine was a stockbroker and came from my school, so we knew each other. And it was in the 80s where they were trying to train as many people that could talk to become stockbrokers and just take orders on the phone. Sounds a lot more glamorous than what it was, but in my head, for me, it was Wall Street. I was going to have a Porsche by the weekend. And so I got this job. They said that they had a trainee position in Hong Kong. They were moving 100 and something people out to Hong Kong because that had now become the Tiger market, which was the next big bull market of the 80s and early 90s. So I moved out there and I landed on the Saturday. I did orientation on the Monday and I was fired on the Tuesday. So I had no job. But here's where, yeah, but here's what had happened, which really, and again, that ignorance. I sat there in a bar on that. I think this was like midweek now. I had no job. They had told me I could stay in the company apartment for the next month. They actually paid me the month up front because they fired me. So it was more money than I had seen, even though I was living in Hong Kong, which meant that it was going real quick. And I sat there and I thought to myself, I can go home and be excused. I can go back to London and everyone's going to turn around and go, well, what did you expect? You know, you go, yeah, oh, Steve, you're a silly boy for trying that. And I could have laughed and joked and I could have slotted back in and I would have been fine. I had all the excuses I needed. But I thought to myself, what about if I do something silly? I've got no one talking to me at the moment. I've got no one supporting me at the moment. What if I try? what do I have to lose? I've already got my excuses. I've already got my jail card. You know, I can go back and go, oh, I got a funny story for you boys. But I tried something different. And of course, I tried to sell expensive cars because I realized you are the combination of the five people you hang around with. The five people I knew were basically broke-ass British bikers. Okay, so I could very easily go back into that world, but that's never going to buy me a Porsche. That's never going to get me a penthouse. I'm never going to have those things if I hang around with poor people. More importantly, poor minds. That's the thing I noticed. So I thought, if I can hang around with 10 people that actually made money, what would that do to me? And so I tried getting jobs for selling yachts and cars and planes and jewelry and all the luxury items. And of course, no one ever touched me because I'm big and ugly. So I got a job which was well suited for my looks. I became a doorman of a nightclub. And while you would think, as I did, this is nowhere near your dream, it suddenly gave me a soapbox to be able to watch the world. You can see so many different kinds of people walking into a club that I suddenly started going, oh, and I played the game. I want to be him. I don't want to be him. We would live in Hong Kong. I would be on the door. And here's an example. A car would pull up outside of the front of the club. Okay. Two people would get out of it. Two people, two different kinds of people would get out of that driving seat. The one where the car drove them, and they would get out and they would check out the audience. Have you seen my car? Are you impressed? You're going to want to talk to me. I'm some big shit. Look at my car. Pay attention. I've arrived. That kind of person. And then you would get the other person that jumped out of the car that had driven the car. And they would be like, hey, hell, and they would be very nonchalant about it. Hey, do me a favor, you know, park it out front or look after it. Here's an extra $20. That kind of person that wouldn't make a big deal of it. And I suddenly started noticing that happens in our life a lot now. Are you wearing the suit or is the suit wearing you? Are you wearing that expensive watch or is it vice versa? And it became a great platform for me to be able to watch the world. And then I noticed that people that go out at night, they want one thing, to have a good time. Okay. There are others that go out that want to kind of like, you know, get into fights and stuff like that. But I was hanging around with the people that wanted to have a good time. And as a doorman, I knew all the best clubs. So my reason to be able to talk to them, and I've said this from day one, if you want to talk to someone, give them a reason to talk back. If I come up to you and I go, hey, you know, man, you got to talk to me because I want this done. And yeah, you've got some great connections and you know, Dennis, and I want this, I want, I want, I want. Then you know how that helps me. How does it help you? But if I come to you and I say, hey, you've got this podcast and it's great. I know you know Dennis. I know Billy. Can I introduce you to Billy? And I'm bringing value to the conversation. So I gave these people a reason to talk to me by saying, hey, I've got a new club that I'm opening up on Tuesday. Do you want to come?
Do you want to get pre-access? Do you want to be behind the velvet rope?
Do you want VIP access? Hey, there's a problem. Because I was a pretty good doorman, and funny enough, not because I was a good fighter, I could talk the situation down very well.
Another thing that we have in common, I spent time at a door as well. So
yeah, no one wants to get into a fight, you know, because you watch all these Bruce Lee movies where he's got the tiny little scratch over his eye and a little bit of perfect. That doesn't happen.
No, it's broken limbs and noses and knives that get slashed across you. It's not fun stuff.
It's not. So I would literally just walk up to people and I've been told to get you out of the club. I don't want to be doing that. We can dance and kind of like start wrestling. Ain't going to be pretty. It's going to mess up my suit. It's going to mess up your night. Or you can pay your bill, leave, and you know, just give me a wave and come back tomorrow night, mate. And it was good. And I would often find that confronted with those two options, both of them being honorable, they would go for the one that was cleaner and I would cool it down. So whenever someone would say to me, hey, there's a premiere coming up and we need you to work security, I'd be like, fine, can I have five tickets? And then I would go back to my club guests and I'd go, hey, I got these five tickets. Or I'd go and say, look, I'm working this event. I may be able to get you in. Is it of interest? And they'd be like, yeah, let me make a call. And then you go and stand back on the door for 20 minutes, come back in and go, okay, I've looked after you. It's a grand a piece. And they'd be like, oh, great. And I realized very early on that people didn't like to be turned down. They wanted to do something that was extraordinary and fun and special. And they were thrilled to pay to do it. I know whenever I turned around and said, hey, I can get you these tickets that for free. Half the time the people go, oh, yeah, I couldn't make it that night. But thanks for the ticket. But I didn't use your ticket. I didn't go because I had something else coming. They didn't value it. So I realized again that if they pay, they pay attention. So I was learning all of these things from the door without realizing that I was actually now starting to communicate with richer and richer and richer and richer people And that's what grew it. I started throwing my own parties, started throwing them on yachts. Then people would come to me and say, hey, I'm part of ward shows. Can you come and help us? And then I would start marketing. It just went bigger and bigger. And again, back to my beginning, the power of ignorance. I wasn't scared because I didn't know what I was supposed to be scared of. Nowadays, if I was to introduce you to a really, really, really rich person that's super powerful, super connected, can move the needle on your bank account so easily just with one bloody tweet, most people would actually be petrified to talk to that person. Now me, I'm running up there ready for a bear hug. Because, you know, for me, if this person can do it, all I need to know is what can I bring to the table that's going to make him want to talk back.
But it's also the fact is, the worst somebody can tell you is no. That's the worst that can happen.
But so many people are scared of that word.
No, but it's true. I mean, so many people are scared of the word no. And I want to go back a little bit because it's so important what you said. It's how you made people feel. And what you did is they valued what you were able to do with them because it cost them something. They had to have some skin in the game. They had to have some skin in the game. If I give you a free $1,000 ticket to something, you're right. I may use it, I may not, because it didn't cost me anything. It has no value. It may be the number one show in town, but if I can't make it, something else comes up better. Well, whatever. I didn't pay for the ticket. It's no big deal. But Steve says, you know what? Let me go make a phone call. You know, hang on. Let me just see what I can do for you. Let me see if I can get you VIP access. And you know what? Yeah, I can do it. The tickets are $1,000 a piece. Here's my Visa card. I want in because all of a sudden you've given somebody an experience. And I think we value experience way more than we value money. And I think we should. And I think that that's so important that we need to be able to sit there and say, how can you make people feel? How can you give them an experience that they can never get on their own?
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. The YourBrandMarketing.live podcast is sponsored by How to Retain Employees Through Leadership online course. Go to courses.yourbrandmarketing.com. That's courses.yourbrandmarketing.com and put in Your Living Brand 50 for a $50 coupon. Thanks a lot. Welcome back to the YourLivingBrand.live show.
In your case, is they're too afraid to ask for on their own? Are they too afraid to try to achieve on their own?
Yeah, and you also notice that the higher the profile the person gets, the more powerful, the more connected, the less they want that no, and the less they want to ask. Because you see, if Brad Pitt tomorrow turned up at a nightclub and the nightclub was packed and the doorman turned him away, that would be front page news the following day.
It was in Vancouver a few months ago. You know, not Brad Pitt, but same type of thing. Is a big VIP got turned away because the doorman didn't realize who it was.
Yeah, and how good is that for the club?
Horrible.
No, it's brilliant.
Oh, well, okay.
If you think about it, the VIP wanted to go to that club. So if you're a normal regular Joe and you want to go to a hot club, and that was the club that the VIP wanted to go to, even though the doorman was a dumbass to turn him away, he's now got the media out of it that this club was so much in demand that that was the one the VIP wanted to go to. So there's all of this media. The club is over the moon because had the VIP got into that club that night,
there'd be no story.
There'd be no story. So a lot of people are scared to ask. When they come to me, I will go and make things happen and I won't mention the client's name. So quite often I've had, and I can't mention the show, but there's a very, very famous award show. And I was working with them on the branding and marketing. Now, I get paid, but I also require seats, okay, which I can then go back to my clients and go, hey, I've got 50 seats, I've got 20 seats, I've got 10, whatever. So I had a bunch of seats, okay? And I started working this event. The guy who was on the board of directors contacted me and said, hey, I know what part of your contract, you got an inventory of seats for this event. I want to buy four. And I went, hang on a minute. You're the guy that wrote my paycheck.
You're the guy who's in charge.
You want to buy four of my tickets that you get for free for your own show. And he said, well, yeah, but we get a certain amount. I said, look, I don't want to be rude, But to you, this show is a big deal, and it is. But to my clients, it's a huge deal. You have no idea how much I'm selling these tickets for. And he said, well, I've got an idea. And I was selling these tickets for about $10,000 to $12,000 per ticket.
And people were paying it, no problem.
I'd already sold about 75% of my inventory, okay? And I said to him, that's how much I'm selling my tickets for. So I can't give you a break. And he turned around, he went, no, I don't want a break. I'll pay that for the four tickets. And I said to him, why? Why would you do that? And he said, listen, if I go back to the board and tell them that I'm pulling another four tickets out of inventory for my family, I'm going to get it, but I'm going to owe them a favor. They're going to come back to me sometime, someplace, and go, hey, Jimmy, we helped you out with those four tickets. We need this now. We need that. Oh, can you do that? Can you lower your price? They're going to come back. He said, paying you. He said, it's a one-time deal. He said, and there's no comeback. And I learned very early on that favors gather more interest than if you'd borrowed the money from the mafia. And so he paid me because I was the quickest, simplest, easiest route to get in there that had no repercussions down the line. So that was another thing. But it was very funny, me invoicing the actual guy that wrote my check for four tickets that he had supplied me.
Well, it's funny because I like to bet. Whether it's the Masters, the Super Bowl, Final Four, I've loved betting. And I don't bet a huge amount of money, but I bet with buddies of mine. And sometimes I sit there and say, you know what? It's far better for them to owe me than for me to collect. The fact that they owe me the $100 is worth way more to me than the $100 itself. I could care less about the money, whether I made the money or I didn't win the money. It's found cash. $100 is going to take me out for dinner or whatever. It's not enough to change my life. But the fact that they owe me $100, it says, you know what? Forget about the $100. Can you do this for me? And all of a sudden, that $100 could be worth $1,000 or $10,000 based on whatever that favor is. It's amazing how, you're right, favors are capital.
They absolutely are. They absolutely are. And it can get well out of hand. But money has no trigger. Money has no emotion. It's what you do with it that creates the emotion and the trigger. People focus heavily on this money and think, oh, yeah, I got it. No, it's what you're going to do with it that's really going to instigate something in your life, benefit a relationship, grow a relationship, create a memory, create an emotion. That's what the money is, nothing more than the instigator to the emotion and the trigger.
So let's talk about communication. Let's talk about when you're putting programs together for people, it's all about understanding not what they want, but why they want it.
Yeah, the first and the most obvious question I get, well, there's a few obvious ones, but one of them is, and for anyone that's still trying to kind of like piece together what I've done, I've arranged people to get married in the Vatican, send people down to the Titanic, send them up in space station, put them on stage with our favorite rock stars. I've worked with everyone from Richard Branson, Elon Musk, to Sir Elton John. So my clients are literally the who's who. Funny enough, those guys are rich, but I work with some of the richest and most unknown people in the planet. Ukraine, Russia, Korea, you know, my who's who is quite decent. So that's what I do. And the most common question I get is, have you ever failed to get what the client asked for? And I've been very happily arrogant to turn around and say, no, never. And the reason I've never failed to get the client what they asked for is because I never tried in the first place. You see, when someone wants something and they like something, they usually won't tell you everything they want. You know, they'll dilute it a little bit. So I listen to what the client asks for. Then I try to gather out why. What is the substance? Let me give you an example. We had a guy a few years ago, and again, I was working with Elton John at the time, and he wanted to meet Elton John at Sir Elton John's Oscar party that just finished last weekend. And I said to him, I said, oh, okay, great. Why do you want to do that? And his response was, well, he's one of the last celebrities. He's one of the most famous people in the world. He's a musician, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's awesome. One day he's going to die and I want to get a photograph with him. That was his answer. So I said to him, oh, that sounds great. Brilliant. I'll come back to you. There was no meat on the bones there. There was no real driving core trigger, no emotion to make this work. So it was about a month later, we get another phone call. We actually thought it was from someone in his office because we had not got back to the guy. We thought these two guys were connected. So one of my team went, oh, we've got some guy. It may be related. And I went, oh, put him through. So I went, hey, how you doing? You know, what are you looking for? And he said, I want to meet Sir Elton John. I was like, oh, really? You know, why do you want to do that? And he went, well, you know, he's, and he went into the same, basically the same stuff that the guy had said prior. He's one of the greats. He's one of the last icons. You know, he's been around forever. Everyone knows his music. He's great. And well, you know, there's things. And it was that last Peter off that gave me my hook. So I went, what things? And if you ever heard of Chris Voss? Right. So Chris Voss taught me that whenever you're talking to someone, match their excitement and then get into your midnight DJ voice. So someone goes, hey, I want to meet Elton John. You go, oh, that's fantastic. But why is that important? And you lower the tone. And what this does is it triggers your mind to actually think of your next answer. So I said to the guy, you know, what's those things? All calm and quiet and definitely a different rhythm to what he was saying. And he went quiet. And then he came back and he said, look, when I was a kid, my dad used to pick me up, take me to school and bring me back from school. That was our thing. Not me, mum. My dad would always take me. He would always bring me back. And we had this car that had this busted up old stereo in it. And we had one cassette, he said, and it was Sir Elton John. He said, and we would go to school listening to Elton John, come back. And my dad would sing and he would sing badly. And I remember as a little kid, I would sing along with him. And as a teenager, he was embarrassing. But he would always sing those songs. He said, now, my dad's no longer with me. But every time I'm driving down the road and the radio's on and Elton comes on the radio, my dad sat next to me. I want to tell Elton. Now, that was a core. That was a trigger. I was trying not to cry on the phone and I failed. And I went over to them and I introduced him and he told this story and he hugged it out and he got fucked. There was the core reason. I needed that core. I needed the reason why to be able to amplify it. And so when people come up to you, I had one guy come up to me and he said, I want to meet the rock band Journey. I said, what do you want to do? He said, oh, I want to go backstage and shake their hand. That was not going to do anything. And when I heard the reasons why in his life and how impactful Journey had been to him, I conveyed that to the band. He actually went on stage in San Diego in front of about 2,000 people and sang live with the rock band Journey as the shortest term lead singer of the rock band. He jammed on stage all the bloody fog machines and everything. So it's very important to understand the why and the core reason behind it. So have I failed at getting anything anyone wants? No, because I've never even tried.
And I think that's so important because we can sell a why. It's a lot easier to sell a why. If people understand why you need to have something happen, what is the underlying meaning behind it? What is it going to do for you if this happens? It's so much easier to sell, whether it's in business, whether it's personal relationships, whether it's whatever it is, it's so much easier to get people to sit there and say, oh, that's why. Yeah, okay, I can get behind that. And just say, I want to meet Elton John. Yeah, I'd love to meet Elton John. I think that'd be cool. I've seen him 7 times on stage or 6 times on stage. I think he's absolutely an incredible reason. But that's not a good enough reason for you to get me on stage singing a ballad out with Elton John. There's got to be something more behind it in order to make that happen.
Yeah, it's not good enough for you. It may be good enough for me to sell you it, but it's not a good enough reason for you. And so it's very important that the sad thing is, and we have to add to that because you're 100% correct, people, and it's back to this fear, people are terrified of being vulnerable. People are terrified of actually telling you what they really want and the reason why. You know, he doesn't want to tell me that story about his dad because he doesn't want me to laugh at him. Who the hell is going to laugh at that story? But people don't want to come forward. Here's a little test that you can play with your friends. If you go up to your friend and you go, hey, Johnny, you know, tonight we go out and you get a lottery ticket and you win $50 million tomorrow. What are you going to do this weekend? You're going to get a story like, oh, I'm going to get a mansion. It's going to get a pool. I'm going to throw a hot tub party and all the Victoria's Secret models are going to be in my hot tub. That's going to be the first answer. And you're going to go, oh, that's great. What are you going to do the following month? And then it's going to be things like, well, my school's pretty run down and I want to help it with a library, or this music course doesn't happen anymore at my school. I want to pay for the music program to come back, or my dad's always wanted to fly over. All of a sudden, the thoughts come in and the triggers. We are very scared of being vulnerable today, and far too many people use vulnerability as the pity play, as a marketing ploy. Okay. So we're kind of scared as to whether or not it's cheesy or we're going to be laughed at. And you look on Instagram and everyone's life is perfect. I do some challenging things on Instagram, but trust me, I'm never going to do this. I've never seen an Instagram posting with someone on the toilet. No one wants to see it, but everyone does it. It's just one of those things. And I'm telling you not to post pictures of you on the toilet. I promise I won't. But the point is that everyone shows the highlights. No one shows the red bill that they've just got, okay? No one shows the shit that they're going through. They always show the perfect side of life. And so we're getting more terrified to say what truly means something to us. We'd rather say something that makes us look cooler in your eyes. And at the end of the day, who gives a rat's ass what you think? It's about what I feel. And if it resonates with you, that's called a relationship. That's why anyone that you communicate with that takes no effort, that's because you've got a connection. I'm proud to say, but we've all had those clients, which are a freaking effort. They're a pain in the ass, okay? Those people create cancer in your business because then your resentment to them starts being carried on over to new prospects, new leads. And people are like, well, why is that person in a bad mood? Well, it's because you've had to look after a-hole over here. If you focus, and here's the daft thing, and you'll understand this as a doorman. On the door, you can notice very quickly the guys and girls are celebrating an event, the guys and girls that are out on the pool that night, the guys and girls that are going out on that first date, that fifth date, that 20th anniversary. And if you get better at it, you can pick up on the troublemakers. And here's the thing. If you control who walks through your front door, you remove 99% of the problems on the inside. Now, as a doorman, we know that, okay? Couple of guys are a bit leery. They got a few beers. And like, sorry, boys, we're packed out tonight, but come back tomorrow night and I'll let you in for free. You know, something like that. And they wander off. You've saved yourself a guaranteed punch up inside. Okay? You've saved yourself. But people don't do that in business. Someone comes along. They're like, yeah, I'm looking at your project. Oh, that's fantastic. Great. You're going checkbook, checkbook, checkbook. You're not looking at the pain in the ass of who's in front of you. And they're like, well, show me what you would work through. Well, but if you don't show me, I don't know whether or not it's worth it. You end up giving away the freaking farm and the person, trying to be polite, goes off and tries to recreate it himself. Or says, well, I know half of what you're going to do now, so I'm only going to pay you half to actually implement it. We've all had those people and they tire us and wear us down. Focus on the people walking through your door. You will eliminate 99% of the problems on the inside.
True. Because too many people just try to, they say, if somebody's got a heartbeat and a Visa card, they must be a client of mine.
If I've got a McDonald's franchise, that's a brilliant attitude to have.
Yeah.
But if you've got anything that sells over $400, that's the stupidest idea I've ever had.
It's true. It's true. Because, you know, my attitude is, you're right. There are clients that are a royal pain and there are clients that are brilliant. And the ones that are brilliant appreciate and they see the value in what you do. And they're willing to pay for it and they're willing to pay for it on time. And they're willing to work with you if there's a problem. Because none of us are perfect. I've made mistakes. You've made mistakes. We've all made mistakes in our time. As long as we're willing to fix them, the reasonable clients will stick with us. The reasonable clients sit there and say, yeah, he made a mistake, but he made it right.
You can't tell the color of a man's cloth until the shit's hit the fan.
True.
And how they've done something with it. Everyone's perfect and brilliant and cool as a cucumber when things are going right. But when the ship starts to get a bit rocky, that's when you can really focus on who can hustle and who can actually work it out. So all of my greatest relationships have always come from when things have gone wrong. And I've gone, hang on, they stood up. That's someone that I want to know.
Yeah, and that's somebody you want to continue to know.
Yes, correct.
Steve, this has been a brilliant conversation, and we could go for an hour. I want to leave everybody with two important things. One, what's the best way to get in touch with you? Because on your website, there are some incredible things. There's some courses, consulting, all the amazing things that people can get in touch with you. So how do people get in touch with you?
Well, the easiest way is to head over to stevedsims.com. That's a D for dog. Sims, S-I-M-S, only one M, stevedsims.com. But I also have a Facebook group called An Entrepreneur's Advantage with Steve Sims. It's free of charge. And I just rant about stuff that I've found and about new technologies I've tried and things that have worked for me, things that have failed for me, you know, and we have it as a safe place where everyone can grow. But if you just Google Steve D. Sims, you'll find me on Instagram, YouTube, all over the planet.
That's brilliant. And here's the question I ask everybody as they walk out my door.
Okay.
When you've left the meeting, when you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Oh, that took a twist at the end. What's the one thing? Okay, I'm going to tweak it slightly. I don't want them to think. I want there to be a lack of effort about what they think. If they need effort to understand what I was saying, who I am, what I stand for, what I'm there to solve, then I've not demonstrated directness and value of who I am. Far too many people complicate themselves. Don't do it. I want to be impossible to misunderstand. So I want people to have no effort in understanding the message I left them with.
Steve, that's brilliant. You have been an amazing guest. I have loved every minute of it. I've laughed with you. I can't wait to re-listen to this thing and pick up some more nuggets. So thank you for being on the show and thank you for all you do. I'm going to keep my eye open and just see, you know, what are the incredible things that you keep doing and see what I can do to emulate it, because I love what you're doing out there.
Cheers, man. All the best.
Cheers.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?